Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 145 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release episodes, but you can also listen to us on many other fine podcast streaming services such as Stitcher and Google Play and others like iHeartRadio. Please rate and review our podcast if you have a spare 30 seconds and help us reach more theater lovers out there around the globe. And now for this week's episode. Paul Minx, whose plays include The Long Road South, which played at the King's Head Theater with Imogen Stubbs and Michael Brandon, and See How Beautiful I Am at the Bush Theater, has a new play in town. The Dog Walker makes its London premiere at the German Street Theater this week with a fantastic cast of Victoria Yates, seen on the small screen in Call the Midwife, and on the big screen in Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. And beside her on stage is Andrew Dennis, who we had seen at the National Theater in One Man, Two Governors. The story is that of Dokes, a professional dog walker who encounters Carrie, a dog owner, and an empty ouzo bottle filled flat with no sign of a dog. Paul Minx's story is finding connections in the big city of New York, and it's a moving, funny play proving that hope springs in the most unlikely of situations. Now, I sat down with Victoria and Andrew in the rehearsal room, and we were joined by the playwright Paul Minx and the show's director Harry Burton, who we've had on our podcast before. And it's a great conversation full of insights from the cast and the creators in the room about mental health, addiction, and it's how dark times can be funny in the right context. Have a listen.
I'm Paul Minx, and I am the writer.
Cool. I'm Victoria Yates, and I play the part of Carrie.
I'm Andrew Dennis, and I play Herbert Dokes.
And I'm Harry Burton, I'm directing the play.
It would be remiss of me to fail to ask about what this play is with the writer here, but I almost want to ask of the people who are in it, like what it is to you. I will get to you.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But when you first got the script, what was the script to you and kind of the underlying themes, and then we'll come back to playwright.
Well, for me, it's a woman who's struggling with addiction and trauma, and it's really about connection, about how in a big city the importance of connecting with someone, compassion, what happens when people, suffer from loneliness and when people fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
And that really, when I read it, I just thought, I always think when I'm walking up and down the street, someone's going through that right now and they're completely isolated and they don't know how to get themselves out of it, and how being witnessed and seen with exactly where you are right now, and how, and they both in this place see each other at their worst, and they're going to get each other through it.
Yeah.
That's what I felt when I first read it.
Yeah, yeah. When I first read it, there were a lot of resonance of the failing to re-establish, a stranger failing to re-establish themselves in a new land. You know, my parents came over from Jamaica, very, you know, educated and affluent background, and when they came to England, they had to start at the bottom of the rudder. And Herbert Oakes has a similar passage. You know, he's very bright at home. He's an academic man, but the only job he can get settling in America is walking dogs, and he's also a janitor.
Right.
But a custodial engineer.
That's what we call them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What struck me when I read it was the keeping up of appearances when everything else is in bad shape. And it really struck me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's with regards of just the familiarity of it, seeing my own parents when, you know, growing up in the 70s and, you know, my mother now, after struggling for so long, lives in Germany and has done for 40 years because she was given an opportunity in Germany where she was allowed to succeed.
Wow.
So again, there was lots of resonances, you know, it resonated with things, not pretty close, but just the familiarity. And also, it's a great read.
Yeah.
It's
a
brilliant read.
Always.
Yeah, yeah.
Always.
Now, you know, you receive things and you think, oh, I'll read it. I'll read it one at a time. And then before you know it, 2.5 hours later or an hour later, in this case, you've gone through the whole thing.
Mm.
And you then start thinking, oh, no, okay, I've already got too attached. If they don't want me, I'm not going to go and sit. Because I'll just be sitting again. I wouldn't have done it like that.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, because it was an instant, oh, I'd love to do this.
Same here.
I'd love to do this.
I love the honesty there because any actor that says they don't do that is lying.
Yeah, completely.
Never lend that person.
Completely.
Never.
I don't think I've ever been to see a show that I really wanted to be in.
Yeah.
Just because. Yeah. So, I'm totally honest that way.
And is that the kind of vibe you're looking for when you wrote it? Is that the intent? I mean, it sounds very, very much like today and what people are talking about. And the media is the mental health, and also with the Wing Rush, scandal here, like it's very, you know, immediate and can grab onto this quite easily.
Well, it's interesting because I was watching these rehearsals. You sort of live your past life, right? You know, you also live all of the rewrites. And you sit there and you go, was that in this version or was that a previous rewrite? Anyway. Yeah, it's been a wonderful experience from that perspective, watching it come alive, because I've lived with this script for a long time, like 20 years.
Okay.
Wow.
You know, it's gone through many permutations, much like I have, but it started in, I wrote a version of this in the 1990s where Carrie had AIDS. And I was living through the, and I was living in New York City, living through sort of the what was left of the gay community, and it, at the time, and all of the anger, you know, that was there. The downside of that was a bunch of anger doesn't always make for good drama, right? You know, so there was a woman who lived across the street, actually. I don't think I've ever told you guys this. There's a woman who lived across the street from me when I lived in New York, and she was homeless, and she had worked out an agreement with the Chinese Laundry where she worked that she could live under the stairs there, just so long as each morning when they opened the Chinese Laundry, she was gone. Mm-hmm. So she would then walk the streets and just rant. You know, she had this sort of rant. You know, I sort of tracked all of her various, you know, rants as time went on, but I got to wondering, watching her, what that was like. Mm-hmm. You know, what her life was like. And Carrie's much more functional than this person was. But it's sort of a lot of things came together, right? And many drafts later, we have this version, which I think is by far the best. So.
Wow. It hasn't been an iterative. I'll bring you in here. Like, I know you brought you. you're very picky when it comes to scripts. You're very choosy, you know, which is good, which is rightly so as a director. You know, you've got to absolutely fall in love with it, not judge the characters, and not, you know, there is a huge weight on a director's shoulders. You're gonna go, as hard as this script may be, you know, you are very clever and you're picking material. And you know, do you see that in it? How did you kind of come to grab onto this play?
Well, you know, because you and I have done a play together before, that for some reason I've only drawn to and suitable to direct plays where essential human extremes are pitted against one another and the audience goes on that journey with the characters. I watched some Beckett last night. It was beautifully done, but reverential, and the life for me, some of it had been sucked out of it. I want, you know, when I see a play or director, I want that life to be erupting in front of the audience, because I think that's, for me, that's what theatre does best in terms of storytelling, is mirror a magnification of what it is to be human back to the audience. So of course, when I read this play, there are elements in it which I know intimately from my own life, an alcoholic adult. My mum was, you know, very troubled. The loneliness of someone who feels unfulfilled, the terror of not knowing how the rest of your life will go, trauma as a kind of dominant. These are things that not just I, but so many of us experience in life, but don't have the chance to be creative around. But everyone knows that the creative process around that kind of stuff is the healing process itself. So I love to think that, although you can't direct in that way, but I would love to think that some people in the audience will actually feel they've learned something new and essential that will stay with them. Now, I don't do it for that reason. Do it because of the thrill ride of seeing something on stage and going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing that. But that's what I want as a theatre goer. And so that's why I choose the plays. So the minute I read Paul's play, I wanted to do it because it just is full of that. And the ending, I mean, from what Victoria and Andrew...
No spoiler.
No, but I did want to say, you know, hey, and it's a comedy, you know, loneliness, trauma, alcoholism, with hilarious consequences. It's a comedy. It's very funny. And very troubling, and very dark, and that, as you know, that's my thing, is the darkness that is actually at the heart of being human that makes it possible, to, as Victoria said, for connection. And, you know, I can't go on, I'll go on, to quote Beckett.
And I think that you, when you're doing something dark and someone laughs and there's like one person, they go, oh, they've been there.
It's usually me.
Oh, yeah, I know. You should be in the audience. Finding those moments, how has it been for you guys taking a script? Because you've just talked about how many drafts. Has that been a continual thing? You guys finding new things to bring in and play? And I mean, is it set in New York? Is it set in America? Where is it?
Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's set in Hell's Kitchen, 49th Street in Manhattan.
Okay, so have you been finding new things to kind of put into to even take the script even further?
Well, yeah, a Jamaican accent, because Herbert Oakes is originally from Jamaica,
right?
It's so funny. I was talking about this to a friend of mine last night who was in another show, and he's also, his parents are from the West Indies, and you can do an accent because you hear it, but I've never lived with a Jamaican accent, so it's just having to every now and then, I can do one with my friends, I can do one with the family gathering and everything, but it's not a sustained lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's been a real challenge because to my ear, I can hear it. But then there was sometimes I have to go, no, you've got to make that to an audience, which might not be predominantly from that part of the world coming to see the show. It has to be have to be understood.
Yeah.
And so that has been constantly going around in my head now for about a month, or not even longer, even longer. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a real challenge to sustain it.
Yeah.
Because you go with social with friends and you hang out and you flip into it and you come on it and it's cool. But then all of a sudden this is his life. And how does he dilute it in in environments which is predominantly white, so he can be understood.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so it's been a brilliant challenge, and there's every day there's a part of me that still laughs daily in my head about where did Paul get him from? Mm-hmm. You know, Paul's, you know, exactly. I think Paul must have spent some time yeah. to, you know, and that was another thing that appealed to me to you know, somebody to write about somebody else when they're completely different, yeah. polar opposites mm-hmm. to themselves, and it's fantastic. And again, that was another gripper going, wow, you know, it's not often that somebody will sit down and go, you know what? He is from Jamaica.
Yeah.
He has to be from Jamaica.
Yeah.
And that can only be, you know, credited and loved.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
For me, it's the emotional stamina of this play. I completely connected with Kerry to begin with, and I felt like I could hear her. You know, when you read a script and you're like, I know her, I know yeah. this person. I was like, I'm going to play this part. It feels so right. But she's, you know, eight people in one. It's massive, massive shifts all the time. She's very witty, Joan Rivers, very funny. But then, you know, she's incredibly troubled and can be very nasty, but then also very vulnerable and childlike and, right. you know, and very, very clever. Mm. And so it's, you know, you're spinning a lot of plates and it's massive, incredible shifts as an actor. And so that, you know, for me, that's been, you know, it's an incredible piece of text. And I love the muscularity of the language. I think often, I'm a big Tennessee Williams fan, mm-hmm. and often you don't read new writing that has that, where you have the punctuation and that muscularity to really support you, and it's got that poetic nature to it. And that, you know, it's amazing to get to say those words that, yeah, they're your everything, they're your structure, and they're going to hold you and help you.
It's a two-hander. Like,
yeah.
I've done it
yeah.
before, and it is
wow.
not a lot of place to hide. So let's talk about the craft a little bit.
You better exactly. be careful what you wish for.
I know.
Oh, my
wow.
word.
It's flat, my word. And then
it's
you start.
On.
You know, the last time I was on stage, I played Ruckley.
Right.
Okay. And Ruckley swears every now and then in Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
So I've gone from that to yeah. you're on all
yeah.
the time.
There's nowhere
all
to hide.
All the time. There's nowhere to hide. And again, receiving the scripts and you think, I'd love to do this because what a challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the challenge gets presented to you. And you think, okay. And you think, I think I need to get back on a cross trainer.
Yeah.
I need some fitness here. I need some stamina because, oh my, you know, we met up before Christmas and had a read through.
Yeah.
And Paul and Harry there. And I was tired on the way home.
Yeah.
It was a real eye opener. I'm so glad that we did that before.
Was that like an oh shit moment?
I was going to put it more politely than that, but. Yeah, it was, and I walked home, and you know, kids went, Daddy, how was the read-through? And I was like, oh no, I was like, I love you both, but Daddy's not going to be around.
Yeah.
I know Christmas is coming up. I'm going to wish you a happy Christmas now, but I've got, and no,
it takes everything,
and not only that, you know, through working once. Once you agree, that's it. It's in your head.
Yeah.
You know, you're constantly thinking on it. You're constantly working at it. You're constantly referring to it, and you want to. It's so good. You want to do it justice.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
There are times I've been disappointed. But I think I'm letting this whole thing down because yeah. you know, but again,
there's no one else other than
yeah.
It's like having a seat partner for 90 minutes. You kind
yeah,
of go,
I know.
I'm letting them down because there's no one else. You can't kind of go, guys. Can you just help me out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw you the ball.
Seriously.
And you sort it out. I'm like, all you. No. Nope.
Well, it takes a
she's,
lot of focus.
She's my buddy, man.
Aww.
Seriously, Vic's, oh man. Just because it's enormous.
Yeah.
The play itself isn't that big, but as Vic said, there's so much that goes on.
Yeah.
And you know, there are moments. You know, in improvisation, they call a certain comedic moment shelving. You mention an idea, you
yep.
put it on the shelf, and then you bring it back.
To life.
And Paul has so many of those where I'm like, oh, why have we gone back to... Oh, yeah, right. Mentioned it 20 pages ago.
Yeah.
And just having to work out a thread, to thread it all through. And again, I've had to lose some poundage. I've had to go, okay, right. All those midnight, midnight nibbles.
I don't think he's half a stone by the end of this.
Yeah, those midnight nibbles have long gone.
It's great to be working. That you know, I feel you know, we really get on and we feel very there for each other.
Yeah.
And this isn't theatrical chat chat.
But you feel, and that's the thing, because you know that that person. Well, you can save you. Yeah. You can save you. Yeah, you need to, you know, it's like, you know, that look
help
in the eye.
Help me. You can literally say, help me. The worst look you can get back is this.
I know. Or she'll offer me the dog. Just grab the dog.
That is not what I wanted. That is not the right lifesaver. What I like about this is it's such an amazing mix of, it's really, it can be quite slapstick humour, very witty, with this darkness. And I love that when you go and see a show where you sort of keep going in and out of, what is this? And it kind of can really open up the audience, I think, because they think it's one thing, then it's something else. And so all their armour starts to go. And so by the end, they're really open, and I think that's what's also really enjoyable. You don't know what it is. What it is at the end isn't what it is at the beginning.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a new play, so we actually, until we have an audience, we don't know what we've got, because they'll teach these guys how to play the rhythm of it, and you know what that's like, that exciting moment at the end of rehearsals where you realise you're literally going into the darkness.
Yeah.
But more is about to be revealed, and that's where you find us today, pregnant with possibility. But actually, we're now very close to needing an audience to do the next phase of development.
Yeah.
But that's a great place.
It's a great place to be. It's also. I think it's that moment when you go, okay, we know, you know, we're hitting the marks, we're hitting the emotional marks, whatever it is. Now, what do we want the audience to get out of this?
Absolutely.
Paul and Aaron, I mean, that's a great question for you to ask. What would you like the audience to go away with having put this on?
Well, actually, what you just said that reminded me, I've been away for a couple of days and came back and saw it yesterday, and I actually started laughing. And I know when I'm laughing at my fabulous joke. He said with the greatest humility, or lack thereof, that they're hitting the marks, right? So I can tell the humor's there, right? So that's always a good sign for me. But what do I want the audience to take away? Oh, I don't know. Harry, what do you want? It's very hard for me to talk about my own play.
Of course. Yeah. But what I want is for the audience to take away the characters, you see. That's what the wonderful thing about acting, which is the magic that never fails to, you know, when it arrives, if it arrives, please God, is that these characters are now running them. That, you know, the characters become presences. They actually take on active life and so forth. And so, it's these actors' work, but the characters are roaring through them, and they're roaring towards the audience. And that's what I want people to take away, is this feeling of, I've just met two incredible, larger-than-life people, you know, with all the attributes of a real human being, and go out, you know, and live their lives accordingly. You know, we're in a time where we don't need people living small lives.
Yeah.
You know? We need people to step up and face up to whatever the issues are and move through them into healing. Yeah. And then the minute you've done something tricky in your own life, you've got something you can give away and share with somebody else. Mm. And I think that is in Paul's play. It is a very optimistic ending. Not romantic, but the possibility of connection between people who thought that had gone forever and that nothing could change the darkness that has settled on them. And this play says, no, never give that up. Never forget that anything's possible if you're a human being. Mm-hmm. But to be a human being, you've got to be vulnerable and be open.
They don't get married?
That's the second. That's the secret.
Absolutely.
If you want that, go see Doug.
Spoiler alert.
coming near you soon. Yeah.
We're doing 101 rescue dogs.
Also, for me, one of the things, like a lot of people, especially, I don't know, we're talking about this, whether in the UK it's more that people are very judgmental about addiction.
Yes.
It still all to do with a weakness of character. Yeah. And that was a really big thing when reading this play that I, you know, as we go through the play, people start to see themselves in Kerry and that it could happen to them.
Yeah.
And that is really important for me. Again, with the mental health issue, that it isn't, you know, it's a disease and an illness. That's one thing I've talked about in interviews, is that idea of judgment. And I hope people come out of this with, you know, maybe that is shifted something.
Yeah. Mm. So how do we see this? Where do we see this, guys? Like, first part of that question is how big of a performing space and auditorium you take, because that kind of informs an audience the how close they get, or how intimate they may feel, or how involved they feel, it gets sucked in. You know, I do love small space myself, but and the second part of that question is how do we come and see it, and when and where?
It's a small theater, and it's a chamber. Feels like a chamber piece in a lot of ways. It's not
my favorite stuff.
Yeah, it's not a $40 million musical in the West End, although it could be. I'm crazy.
Yes, I'll marry you, my dear.
It's actually. I love singing in my plays, so there's tons of. It's actually for those of you who like musicals, please come. and it is at the audience is very close to the stage, very close.
Yeah.
Indeed. It's at the German Street Theater.
Okay.
First preview is the 12th,
which
is next week, the 12th and 13th. There's two previews. And then opening night is on Valentine's Day.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Please bring your loved ones.
For those of you who don't know where the German Street Theater is, just off Piccadilly. It is so easy to get to. It's a great space.
Yeah. And there's great restaurants around there if you want to go have dinner before or after.
It'd be interesting when we do get an audience, as Harry says, about, because it's a new writing, but also the space, because there are times when it's explosive and it's like, how do you now contain and monitor that? So I've got my work cut out.
In an angry place, but you know, in a small space, you know, pistons are small because that's how you can make something combustible and to make it give it that much energy. Mm-hmm. So the smaller the space, you tend to go, oh, you know, I love going to theater. It makes me go, oh, what am I? I can't leave it. Oh my lord!
People who like new writing are going to have a great night.
Yeah.
People who love performance up close and dangerous are going to have a great night.
And people who like good acting
and comedy, it's
got everything.
It's got everything, but most excitingly, it's new work in the West End.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
In the middle of London. Absolutely.
Come on down.
Cannot beat it.
So, tickets at the German Street Theatre, germanstreettheatre.co.uk. And if we haven't said it, the play is called
The Dog Walker.
Very good. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Victoria Yates, Andrew Dennis, Paul Minks, and Harry Burton, the company behind The Dog Walker, playing at the German Street Theatre. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping bits and pieces. If you are a theatre professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call, and you can follow me at John Schwab. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback from the podcast. Get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Paul Minks, Harry Burton, Andrew Dennis, and Victoria Yates. Catch them at the German Street Theatre in The Dog Walker, playing until the 7th of March. Thanks for listening to the Curtain Call Theatre podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.